also to think of the poor man having to mend his own clothes. The German gentlemen embroider, I know, but darning hose is another thing, and not so pretty. Saturday. Nothing has happened to write about, except a call on Miss Norton, who has a room full of lovely things, and who was very charming, for she showed me all her treasures, and asked me if I would sometimes go with her to lectures and concerts, as her escort, if I enjoyed them. She put it as a favour, but I'm sure Mrs. Kirk has told her about us, and she does it out of kindness to me. I'm as proud as Lucifer, but such favours from such people don't burden me, and I accept it gratefully. When I got back to the nursery, there was such an uproar in the parlour that I looked in, and there was Mr. Bear down on his hands and knees, with Tina on his back, Kitty leading him with a jump rope, and Minnie feeding two small boys with seed cakes as they roared and ramped in cages built of chairs.
"We are playing Nardery," explained Kitty. "This is mein Evelent," added Tina, holding on by the professor's hair. "Mama always allows us to do what we like Saturday afternoon, when Franz and Emil come, doesn't she, Mr. Bear?" said Minnie. The Evelent sat up, looking as much in earnest as any of them, and said soberly to me, "I give you my word it is so. If we make too large a noise, you shall say hush to us, and we go more softly." I promised to do so, but left the door open and enjoyed the fun as much as they did. For a more glorious frolic I never witnessed. They played tag and soldiers, danced and sang, and when it began to grow dark, they all piled onto the sofa about the professor, while he told charming fairy stories of the storks on the chimney-tops and the little kobolds who ride the snowflakes as they fall. I wish Americans were as simple and natural as Germans, don't you? I'm so fond of writing, I should go spinning on forever if motives of economy didn't stop me. For though I've used thin paper and written fine, I tremble to think of the stamps this long letter will need. Pray forward, Amy's, as soon as you can spare them. My small news will sound very flat after her splendours, but you will like them, I know. Is Teddy studying so hard that he can't find time to write to his friends? Take good care of him for me, Beth, and tell me all about the babies, and give heaps of love to everyone. From your faithful, Joe. P.S. On reading over my letter, it strikes me as rather bary, but I am always interested in odd people, and I really had nothing else to write about. Bless you. December. My precious Betsy, as this is to be a scribble-scrabble letter, I direct it to you, for it may amuse you and give you some idea of my goings-on. For though quiet, they are rather amusing, for which, oh, be joyful. After what Amy would call Herculaneum efforts in the way of mental and moral agriculture, my young ideas begin to shoot, and my little twigs to bend as I could wish. They are not so interesting to me as Tina and the boys, but I do my duty by them, and they are fond of me. Franz and Emil are jolly little lads, quite after my own heart, for the mixture of German and American spirit in them produces a constant state of effervescence. Saturday afternoons are riotous times, whether spent in the house or out, for on pleasant days they all go to walk, like a seminary, with the professor and myself to keep order, and then such fun! We are very good friends now, and I've begun to take lessons. I really couldn't help it, and it all came about in such a droll way that I must tell you. To begin at the beginning, Mrs. Kirk called to me one day as I passed Mr. Bear's room where she was rummaging. "Did you ever see such a den, my dear? Just come and help me put these books to rights, for I've turned everything upside down trying to discover what he has done with the 6 new handkerchiefs I gave him not long ago." I went in, and while we worked I looked about me, for it was a den, to be sure. Books and papers everywhere. A broken meerschaum and an old flute over the mantelpiece, as if done with. A ragged bird without any tail chirped on one window seat, and a box of white mice adorned the other. Half-finished boats and bits of string lay among the manuscripts. Dirty little boots stood drying before the fire, and traces of the dearly beloved boys, for whom he makes a slave of himself, were to be seen all over the room. After a grand rummage, 3 of the missing articles were found. one over the birdcage, one covered with ink, and a third burned brown, having been used as a holder.
"Such a man!" laughed good-natured Mrs. K., as she put the relics in the rag-bag. "I suppose the others are torn up to rig ships, bandage cut fingers, or make kite-tails. It's dreadful, but I can't scold him. He's so absent-minded and good-natured, he lets those boys ride over him roughshod. I agreed to do his washing and mending, but he forgets to give out his things, and I forget to look them over, so he comes to a sad pass sometimes."
"Let me mend them," said I. "I don't mind it, and he needn't know. I'd like to. He's so kind to me about bringing my letters and lending books." So I have got his things in order, and knit heels into two pairs of the socks, for they were boggled out of shape with his queer darns. Nothing was said, and I hoped he wouldn't find it out, but one day last week he caught me at it. Hearing the lessons he gives to others has interested and amused me so much that I took a fancy to learn, for Tina runs in and out, leaving the door open, and I can hear. I had been sitting near this door, finishing off the last sock, and trying to understand what he said to a new scholar, who is as stupid as I am. The girl had gone, and I thought he had also. It was so still, and I was busily gabbling over a verb, and rocking to and fro in a most absurd way, when a little crow made me look up, and there was Mr. Bear looking and laughing quietly, while he made signs to Tina not to betray him. "So!" he said, as I stopped and stared like a goose. "You peep at me, I peep at you, and that is not bad. But see, I am not pleasanting when I say, have you a wish for German?"
"Yes, but you are too busy. I am too stupid to learn," I blundered out, as red as a peony.
"Put! We will make the time, and we fail not to find the sense. At evening I shall give a little lesson with much gladness. For look you, Miss Marsh, I have this debt to pay."
And he pointed to my work.
"Yes," they say to one another, "these so kind ladies. He is a stupid old fellow. He will see not what we do. He will never observe that his sock heels go not in holes any more. He will think his buttons go out new when they fall, and believe that strings make themselves. Ah, but I have an eye, and I see much. I have a heart, and I feel the thanks for this. Come, a little lesson then and now, or no more good fairy works for me and mine."
Of course I couldn't say anything after that, and as it really is a splendid opportunity, I made the bargain, and we began. I took four lessons, and then I stuck fast in a grammatical bog. The professor was very patient with me, but it must have been torment to him, and now and then he'd look at me with such an expression of mild despair that it was a toss-up with me whether to laugh or cry. I tried both ways, and when it came to a sniff of utter mortification and woe, he just threw the grammar onto the floor and marched out of the room. I felt myself disgraced and deserted forever, but didn't blame him a particle, and was scrambling my papers together, meaning to rush upstairs and shake myself hard, when in he came, as brisk and beaming as if I'd covered myself with glory.
"Now we shall try a new way. You and I will read these pleasant little märchen together, and dig no more in that dry book that goes in the corner for making us trouble."
He spoke so kindly, and opened Hans Andersen's fairy tale so invitingly before me, that I was more ashamed than ever, and went at my lesson in a neck-or-nothing style that seemed to amuse him immensely. I forgot my bashfulness and pegged away, no other word will express it, with all my might, tumbling over long words, pronouncing according to the inspiration of the minute, and doing my very best. When I finished reading my first page and stopped for breath, he clapped his hands and cried out in his hearty way,
"Das ist gut! Now we go well. My turn. I do him in German. Give me your ear."
And away he went, rumbling out the words with his strong voice and a relish which was good to see as well as hear. Fortunately, the story was the constant tin soldier, which is droll, you know, so I could laugh. And I did, though I didn't understand half he read, for I couldn't help it. He was so earnest, I so excited, and the whole thing so comical. After that we got on better. And now I read my lessons pretty well, for this way of studying suits me, and I can see that the grammar gets tucked into the tales and poetry as one gives pills and jelly. I like it very much, and he doesn't seem tired of it yet, which is very good of him, isn't it? I mean to give him something on Christmas, for I dare not offer money. Tell me something nice, Marmee. I'm glad Laurie seems so happy and busy, that he has given up smoking and lets his hair grow. You see, Beth manages him better than I did. I'm not jealous, dear. Do your best, only don't make a saint of him. I'm afraid I couldn't like him without a spice of human naughtiness. Read him bits of my letters. I haven't time to write much, and that will do just as well. Thank heaven Beth continues so comfortable.